Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. My guest for this episode is Holly Faust, paranormal researcher. Holly, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Let's start with discussing who you are, your background in paranormal, and what got you to that point.
Hey, well, I am currently the spiritual belief and researcher for an occult, symbol belief researcher for the Phantom Detectives. I have been investigating for a little over 30 years. I started about in like 1993 and 94 when I lost my best friend. And a lot of people had told me that he wouldn't get to heaven because of the manner of his death. So I had a lot of questions about that. I wanted to know where, you know, why he wouldn't be there and where he would go if he wasn't.
Well, what was the manner of his death?
He actually committed suicide.
Oh, so yeah, I grew up around Catholics and quote unquote Christians, and there's a lot of hypocrisy there, you know.
Yeah. So. Oh, totally. You know, it was very hard for them, you know, because not only, you know, did he commit suicide, it also came out after his death that he was gay. So that even caused more issues, and you know, people talking. We grew up in a very Irish and Italian town.
Right.
So it was very difficult for me to hear that because, you know, he had been my best friend since we were 4 years old. So, you know, I didn't take that as a plausible answer because he was a good person.
Right.
And I just didn't believe that good people couldn't go to wherever it is you go after death.
Right. Unfortunately, let's speak in a hypothetical. There's a God. He mm-hmm. creates a species of beings on a ball amongst many billions of balls. You think he really cares what your preferences are? You know?
My grandmother used to always tell me that you were created by God and God doesn't create junk. So you are who you are and you're not junk. So that was the theory that I always lived by.
Right. It's one of those things that where we still behave like Romans, right? We live in the
right.
And ironically, Romans didn't like if ancient Greeks, ancient Romans, they had no sexual preference. They didn't care. They did whatever felt good to them. It wasn't until the introduction of the I guess at that time the nuance of Christianity where people started altering their behaviors depicted on what they thought were sin. At the end of the day, we're still animals, you know,
right.
And if there's a higher creator, and I like to believe it's a higher intelligence, not a being that lives on a cloud somewhere sitting there judging us all day, all night. I've gone through these conversations constantly with people. Like, I've had people like pastors and other religious. And look, I'm not knocking religion, all right? I'm not knocking it. But what I am saying is that it's very judgmental. It seems to have more than one face to it. And there's no chance that there's some deity up there that you're doing something. It's going, oh, well, this is wrong. And you're going to go to a fiery pit somewhere. It's nonsense.
Right. And, you know, that's like basically, you know, my belief. I am an esoteric minister. And my belief, you know, being esoteric, we bring in pieces from so many different walks and paths. And I think we all are like a gemstone and we each have a little facet. And when we bring it all together, we create something beautiful and true. And you know, that's just, you know, the way I've always believed. And as I've gotten older, I've believed it more and more because I just see how when we come together as one unit that we can accomplish so many great things.
Right. We should behave like a species. I say this a lot. If you want a race, try human. If you want a religion, try humanity. If you want a call a place of origin, Earth is a pretty good place to start. I had a discussion once with a friend. We were doing research on the ancient Greeks and some of their inventions, and they invented some pretty amazing things. Even the ancient Arabic people would. A lot of our stars and a lot of galaxies are named after Arabic names. Why did these things change? Well, religion. Religion mm-hmm. came around and shut it down. We're basically 2,000 years behind the ball on technology. Had we not had the interference of religious figureheads dictating what's a sin and what's not a sin, we would still be inventing. We would be about 2,000 years further along with technology. Now, would we implode by that time? We don't know. That's the question.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
So through your endeavors, I know Joshua Chairs and the Phantom Detectives, they're great guys. What have you come across? Like, so let's do this. What cases did you work on that you found interesting that gave you beyond any shadow of doubt that there's some form of paranormal existence?
For me, Gettysburg is my favorite place. I only live a little over maybe an hour and 45 minutes from Gettysburg. So I have had an opportunity to spend a lot of time there, you know, since I moved here. And I've been living where I'm at now about 25, 26 years. And I've always been fascinated. My son was actually the first one of us who had experiences on the battlefield. He actually seen a man in a floppy hat. And at first, I didn't see him. And then when I turned my head, I could see him walking towards Devil's Den out of the corner of my eye. And yeah, later that day, we had gone to the Mark Nesbitt's Ghost of Gettysburg office, and we actually were able to see this picture of an apparition. And of course, it was a man in a floppy hat that had been taken on the battlefield. And yeah, for me, that was like the first big thing that I had ever witnessed that made me truly believe that, you know, there is something out there paranormal or something unexplainable, at least. I've had other experiences there of like mists. And when there's nothing, you know, can cause it. You know, it's a nice day. There shouldn't be a mist in the middle of the battlefield. I've had experiences, you know, a lot of them occur, and they all occur in different places. Like in the peach orchard, we were there one night and we totally lost our equilibrium and had no idea where we were. But as we kept looking, we had our kids with us and they kept running towards what they thought were men laying on the ground. And then when we get there, there was nothing there. And so that place is one place that I've always found fascinating. And I think it can be an investigator's playground if people take the time, you know, to, of course, to respect the location, but also to just take their time and pay attention. Because so many people want that quick, you know, oh, yeah, there it is. They right. don't understand that sometimes it takes time and it needs to be the right weather and it needs to have everything come into line to see some of these things.
Well, Gettysburg, I hear about a lot. I eventually going to go out and do a documentary, and I was going to do it some time ago, but I didn't have enough research. I didn't have enough pinpoints. I heard, you know, it was a lot of hearsay. So what I'm trying to do is narrow down to the actual locations, you know, the place to go. And Gettysburg comes up a lot.
Definitely. Because you have a little bit of everything there. You have intelligent, you have residual. The triangular field is a location where many people, like I've experienced losing your equipment. Your equipment just stops working and there's no explanation for it. That happens to so many investigators that I've talked to. You know, it's not just me or other people that I know, but I've actually heard other people that were like, oh, yeah, you know, we were walking through triangular field and everything just died.
Well, what I like so far is that you don't have a background in paranormal. You're investigating this. It's clean the way you're approaching it. You have no real experience so far, and you're getting out there and doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
And I applaud that. That's because that's really, I have no, I've witnessed nothing. I mean, nothing. Isolated incident some time ago regarding the possibility of a UFO. It was a blue orb in the sky, but then again, it was stormy out. I live in Florida. It wasn't far from an airport, so I can't really be sure what I saw because it wasn't like it moved away. It was consumed by the clouds.
Right.
So I've witnessed nothing. So when I go do a documentary and the idea of building a network with people like yourself and others, it gives me an idea of a map to build.
Oh, definitely. I mean, for me, I did have experiences as a young child, but it wasn't really paranormal. They were more psychic experiences.
Right.
And I didn't really have what you could say is my first, you know, actual paranormal until like I was 20 and I was in a car accident and had a near death experience. And for me, that was like my first ever experience with anything like that. And to this day, I still can't explain it. So for me, you know, that even pushed me further because I'd already had this interest in finding these things out. I grew up maybe 20 to 30 minutes from the Smurl haunting in Pittston, PA.
What was it?
I remember that.
What was the near-death experience like for you? I hear from a lot. I've spoken to a handful of people that have had this, and I'm always curious now.
Well, for me, I can honestly say there was no bright light.
Right.
There was no, you know, seeing loved ones. I was in my car. I was in a really bad car accident. I had gotten thrown out at the windshield, but then my seatbelt engaged and pulled me back in. And I was sitting on a snowbank next to my car crying. And this old man came up to me because all I kept saying is, my dad's going to kill me. I wrecked my car. It's, oh my God, look at it. And I could see the people, like the firemen and the ambulance people working on the car. I couldn't see me. This old man came up and sat next to me, and he just kept saying, well, you need to get back in the car. It's not time yet. You know, there's still things to do. You have to get back in the car. And then I remember waking up in the car and yelling at one of my friends who happened to be a first responder, telling him, just open the door. I was just outside. And he looked at me and he said, no, you weren't. You were dead. You know, you were unresponsive. We got nothing from you. And that was shocking for me because I was like, well, what? Who is that guy?
A number of people I'd spoken to about this. That's your representative. You know what I mean? I have to. That's what I come to conclusion on, that these that entity was your probably who's going to give you orientation when you do cross over.
It was odd for me because my accident was literally right next to a cemetery. So, you know, I could never explain, like, was it like a spirit guide or a guardian angel, or was it just someone that was, you know, passing through the cemetery? And
yeah. Yeah, that's your representative. You know what I mean? It's the person who's in charge of you post that thereafter.
Right.
Or at least that's the conclusion I'm coming to. Because I've spoken to a lot of people about near death. And, you know, the vast majority of them say the same thing. No white light, no relatives hanging around. Just some people or some entities, whether it be one or more, who would explain to them that, well, this is truly an accident and it's not in the right timing, and perhaps maybe there's something more you need to do in this realm.
Right. And that was the same exact message that I got. You know, I wasn't done yet. I needed to go back. And, you know, so I was like, okay. And that really pushed me more. I mean, it took me out for quite a few months, but, you know, after I healed and got over the fear of being in a car again, it really pushed me to want to learn more, because like when you experience something like that, you know, you want to know where it came from. You want to know what it was.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about this. Yeah. So you're at Phantom Detectives now, and they're a good group. I like them. I've had them on. What field work have you done so far that you found interesting?
Well, with them or on my own?
You could go both. Well, okay. We'll kind of put
basically
you there.
A lot of the stuff I do with them is a lot of mentoring. I do a lot of research. I don't go out into the field with them. We have two separate areas. We have our, you know, our investigative team and our research team, and I'm more onto the research.
Right.
But, you know, I do a lot of investigating on my own, with friends and with other teams locally to me. And I mean, I've been all the way out to Iowa to investigate the Malvern Manor. I've done St. Albans Sanatorium. I'm actually looking forward to doing Penhurst because it's something close to me. And I haven't, believe it or not, actually spent time there, although I was alive when they were still open. So I know the stories about what happened there. So that's, you know, one of the things. I mean, West Virginia Penitentiary has been a big one for me. I don't like doing prisons, but I would continually go back there because every time you go there, you get a different level or a different layer of something there, because you can't do the whole place in one night.
Right.
It's huge.
Right.
But I do not go into the Sugar Shack there. It gives me I just don't feel comfortable down there. I feel like I'm suffocating, and I feel like it's a place of a lot of, you know, dread and pain. And it kind of matches up with, you know, historically the things that happened there. So, but it is, you know, a very interesting place, as is the Wildwood Sanatorium in New York. It's actually on the Iroquois Seneca Reservation in Salamanca.
Right.
And that is, like, that place is another place that I didn't get a lot of time there and I would want to go back. So, you know, I like to do historical, but then in my area, I do a lot of, like where I live right now, I do a lot of private work with people, like helping people understand what's going on in their home and trying to find ways for them to either cope with it or to try to find ways to help them cleanse it. So that's been a big thing, you know, the last probably 3 or 4 years with me is staying closer to home and helping people locally. We have a lot of cases of hauntings in our area.
So through your research, what is your conclusion on what these apparitions are? These, I mean, I have my own theories, you know, that like an example, someone dies in a car accident, it's instant. So they're not prepared to go to the other side. They're where other people are dying, you know, when they're on a deathbed. Mm-hmm. There's preparation there. If there are loved ones, they are going to be there to you know, greet you. But in cases like, I guess, even suicide, because that's, you know, most cases unforeseen. It's an impulse. Or if you fall off a building, things like that where it's instant. Maybe that's why the residual, why they're still around here. They're kind of in that, like, who am I, where am I, what's going on type phase.
I think for me, I have a few different theories that I've worked with. I do believe in like a sudden death will cause someone to not understand that they've passed and to kind of linger on. But I also believe that tragic deaths, you know, like especially in my area where there was a lot of fighting and wars with, you know, the indigenous people of the area.
Right.
I believe a lot of that can cause these things, but I also believe that sometimes people just have things that they never got done, like unfinished business, that they're still trying to finish after death. And then of course, you know, I also look at the inhuman or the land-based entities, that things have that have been here long before humans existed.
I agree, if there's anything more I agree with, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And you know, I am, you know, I'm part of Lakota. So, you know, that is a big part of our beliefs too, as people, you know, a lot of, you know, these inhuman or land-based entities that we look at in our spirituality. And, you know, I do believe in them. I do believe that we have a lot of these things that are just tied to the land and that they're never going to go away. And we just have to learn how to live with them and work with them.
Yeah. If you watch Graham Hancock, he's under the belief that there has been many civilizations that has come and gone from this planet have gone extinct. You know, extinction level events, we're finding out now have probably happened more often. I mean, this is a 4 billion year old planet, probably older, you know what I mean? Cause who are we to date things with accuracy, but we don't know what existed here prior. It could have been a whole other race of beings. They could have been taller, shorter. They would have looked different vastly. Keep in mind, why dinosaurs and plants and insects were so large in that period of time is there was more oxygen on the planet. So now try to imagine prior to them, if there was a richer environment of oxygen or whatever gas was more rich at that time, is the evolution of the being or creature at that time. So I often wonder if some of these things that we find dark that are looming around are the residual energy of these beings and or creatures from that predate religion, predate humanity.
I can totally agree with that because that's, you know, from a lot of things that I've seen, especially where I'm at, you know, I have come to that conclusion. A lot of times I think people are so quick to judge to the inhuman / demonic that they don't really look at the whole thing. Because when we literally look at hauntings and investigations, less than 1% of them can be deemed as, you know, and what you would call like a possession or an oppression.
I hear it a lot. And I'd spoken to a lot of, I do a lot of off podcast interviews too, people that don't have any desire to have their name out there. Mm-hmm. And a large number of them are like priests and other people who work against quote unquote possessions and demons. Right. And you know, what happens is they, a tremendous amount of cases that they say are not, they never use the word fail. They use the verbiage of couldn't deal with it at that moment and or it was beyond their strength. Make room for the idea that you're spitting religious jargon at something that doesn't apply to them. It predates every religion. They're around prior to man. So when you're utilizing this verbiage to them, they're probably like, what is this guy saying? I'm not, what, you think you're going to get me out with some harsh words and some anger? That's not going to work, you know?
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, something that, like, I can honestly say in 30 plus years, I have witnessed two cases that I would say was definitely that quote unquote demonic type of thing.
Right. And when that's what we deem as demons, we don't know what it is. We're utilizing words to describe things to the best of our ability. Just like with the indigenous people here in America, when they were seeing craft flying above, they were calling these things, even in Roman times and depicted in medieval times, we didn't know what it was we were seeing. So we could only describe it as chariots of fire or gods flying down on fiery, and so when you hear this, it's not to poke fun. They just don't have the vocabulary to describe what it is they're seeing.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that's why in our time, you know, we've developed the verbiage for UFOs because we don't know what they are. They're unidentified.
Right.
So, for all we know, they could be the same things that these people were seeing back in that time and didn't have the verbiage of unidentified.
It's tough, too, because in religion, again, not that I'm attacking religion, but I'm related to people that believe that God made here and here alone. And that there is nothing else out there, which is really narrow-minded considering what we're finding daily. I predict within the next decade, we're going to find right here in our solar system on one of the moons of either Saturn or Jupiter, we're going to find microbiology. It's going to happen. And granted, it's not as interesting as alluring as like a being, but it's life.
It's still a form of life. And, you know, there are certain things that are required for life to form.
Right. I mean, an argument could be made that we sent a probe out there and it crashed into the moon and we know it doesn't matter how sterile our equipment is, something gets on board and perhaps maybe we kicked off the evolution of life on another planet. However they want to measure it, we find life anywhere. It's life somewhere that's not here. You know, right. And now we speak in terms of the paranormal. Now, I've heard people say things like if you're hearing these spirits or if you're visualizing them, maybe you're not right with God or, you know, it's silly because if you think about what our bodies are, it's a vehicle with energy in it. And the energy, I say this a lot, I think our consciousness and our soul are the same thing. It's one and the same. And when your body is no longer viable and your energy leaves it, there's perhaps maybe a source it goes to because, you know, the data is still attached, right? Especially when you're, I don't know, it's hard for me to put in words what I think, especially when you look at the universe and the cosmic web and you see the similarities in our brain structure and the structures of the roots of our planet. You know, it's really a hard argument to say that there's nothing else after this. The big question is, what is after this? And that's the question I'm trying to find. And I'm sure most people are, because when you're alive and you start getting older, you start questioning your mortality. And that's really where it comes from, the curiosity.
And I think it's not only like as you get older, but, you know, when I look at my children, they have attended like more funerals than they have weddings and graduation parties. And, you know, I think I even see them at their age questioning, like, what happens after we leave here?
Right.
And, you know, and that's really what started it for me, because I just couldn't face the answer that people were giving me. You know, I couldn't imagine someone who was so giving and so caring and, you know, a constant comedian not going to some place where he was going to be happy. You know, right. Or, you know, move on to a higher level, we want to call it.
If I'm you, I wouldn't put any stock into someone saying, well, he was gay and he committed suicide, he's going to go to hell. Don't put any stock in that. That's all.
Oh, I learned that a long time ago. I don't.
That's all horseshit.
I don't put any stock into that anymore because, you know, like even growing up in a Catholic home, I was always taught that, you know, there was forgiveness as long as you asked for it. And I believe, you know, in that, even though I no longer follow that belief system in my path and my walk in life.
Right.
You know, I still believe that good things happen to good people, even if we have to struggle to get there.
I mean, we both watch the news. We both know that good things happen to bad people, too. Bad people become wealthy. They live great lives. It's at the end of the day, bad or good, it's the drive that you have that makes you successful. Right now. Right. However, for your moral compass and you know, I have to believe, too, that dependent on what you are. I think this is a testing ground or proving ground here on Earth. And when your energy departs here, depending on your frequency or your vibration is where your energy will be transferred to the next time. Picture like a video game. Let's use an example like Grand Theft Auto, right? If you're bad on the online game, you go to bad sport so you can learn how to behave, you know?
That's where I end up half the
time. Yeah, so, you know, depending on how you behave is where your data goes next, and that'll be your next proving ground. I mean, this is all theory.
Yeah, when you look at, like, and that's why I've gotten so focused on spirituality, because there is so many different, like, we don't even a lot of people don't even realize how many different spiritual practices there are in the world today.
Yeah.
And, you know, they become stuck in their own little, you know, little corner. And even with investigators, and that's really what I've had a lot of focus on, is educating them on the importance of not going into these investigations with their own spiritual beliefs, but going in with an open mind. And if they're working with clients, trying to work with those clients in the belief system that they're in, and not trying to impinge our own beliefs. Like if you're going into, you know, say a pagan household and saying, oh, well, there's demons or whatever, you know, the pagans are going to look at you and like say, what do you mean? We don't believe in that stuff. So what do you do then? Yeah. And that's why I really encourage younger investigators to really do that research to help their clients in a manner that can help them at their own level.
That's true, too, because as you are here, as you are after, and if you're lingering, if you are a Roman Catholic priest and you're spitting you know, Roman Catholic jargon at a, let's say, Jewish spirit, it's not going to work.
Right. And they're going to be like, what are you talking about, right, man? We don't believe in that stuff. Yeah,
you can't kick me out of this house. I don't even understand what you're saying. You know, that, for me as a kid, so my fear of, I had a fear of death as a kid because my grandfather passed away. He fell off a boat and drowned. He was an alcoholic, I'm pretty sure. And I was really young. I'm probably like 5 or 6 years old, and I'm crying. Cause then, you know, that paranoia of your head, like I'm one of these people. I'm very invested into this life. I'm very nostalgic. I love, you know, I was just talking to another person last night on a podcast. John Russell is a psychic, and I was telling him I'm very nostalgic. I love my daughter. I love my possessions. You know, I like the life I had. If I could do it again, I'd relive it again exactly the same way. And so I have to believe that I'm one of these people or these beings that when I depart from here, I might linger. I might bother people. I might harass people. I feel bad for my family. You know what I mean? It's because as a kid, now you at the same time frame, my grandfather perishes. He dies. My mom's explanation, he's gone to heaven. And, you know, because we're Catholic. And my best friend, his name was Jason or Ugart. He was Turkish and he was Muslim. And mm-hmm. I remember in my head thinking, like, well, is he going to go to heaven? Because he doesn't believe in Jesus. I mean, it's like, but so that's the argument. This is a family of people. They're good people. They're kind. I'm not going to say anyone on this planet is good. Let's be frank here. We are still animals. We have instincts. We are still going to, there's not one person on this planet that has not had an impure thought. I don't care how long you've been wearing a cloth or not. So right. Perfection doesn't exist amongst humanity. But if we're just going, if we're predicating it on people being good people, I would say his family were good people. They were very welcoming, very kind. They, you know, so for me as a kid, it was hard to accept the idea that what, he's not going to go to heaven because he doesn't believe in the same religion. And then, you know, somewhere in my teens, religion was shattered. You know, it was completely, and I could tell you when it was. And I said this to John too. It's when you question your elders about, well, why is racism a thing, and why are there different races if we're all made by God? Why do we fight? And then you hear that Tower of Babel story and how God struck it down. And then we have NASA. And for me, I was a kid, like, I just, it's such a tall order. You can't expect me to believe this. I'd rather be a Jedi. You know, that makes more sense to me, you know? In fact, that's my religious preference on social media is Jedi.
Jedi.
It just makes sense to me, you know? So that's where I'm at. And what's happening now, and why the reason for the podcast and eventually the documentary, and why I question so much, I just want answers. You know, I'm not really looking to do anything world changing or you know, no game breaking things. I just want to know. And I got to tell you, it's tough because I think till we, I don't know, could I get a podcast with a deceased person? That'd be awesome.
I think that would answer so many questions for so many of us.
Yeah, it'd be a very comforting thing is to have a spirit on the podcast say, this is what had happened. And then I would ask that question, well, why are you here? Why are you speaking to me? And it's going to say probably what I think I'm going to say. I like it here. I don't want to be anything else. I don't want my data reset to go to another body or another place. I like who I was. And that's problematic for me. But but at least I know at the end, and here's the big thing. So long as I know when the time comes and I do perish, that's I'm not, you know, your brain, the computer turns off and that's it. That would be disappointing.
I think it would be because, you know, we only have a limited time here in this time and space. And, you know, researching, and there's one commonality between almost all spiritual paths is that there is another plane after this one. Right. So it doesn't matter what faith, whether you want to call it heaven, whether you want to call it Valhalla, whether you want to call it Summerlands, there's something.
I agree. There's got to be.
And so that's my belief. If every single, you know, spiritual force that I have spoken with can say the same thing, that yes, there's something after this, you know, then I have to go with it. You know, I even personally, like, I from what I've experienced, I totally believe there's something after this.
You know, John Russell brought a good point to me yesterday. He's a, you know, psychic paranormal investigator, and he said with communicating with the afterlife, it's not cut and clear. It's like imagine you have a good signal on some days, some days you have a bad signal. It really depends on location, what you know, the circumstances that surround it. And when he said that, it made sense to me because, you know, atmospheric things distort what we transmissions of space. Sometimes your cell service isn't even spot on. Let's be honest. Our 5G service, this top of the line technology, fails sometimes. So now, yes, it is as fragile as an energy speaking to another energy. That signal, that's hit or miss.
Right. Especially where I live. I'm out in, like, you know, a very Amish Mennonite area. So we don't have a lot of towers out here.
Yeah. So yeah. For the afterlife, when I hear from a lot of investigators when they're seeing tangible proof, I mean, and again, for me, I've seen the videos, I've seen the photos, and as you know, I'm not one to cast out. I'm pretty non-biased, but until I could touch or at least see, it's hard. Like UFOs, 100% they're real. Yep. We're, you know, because of our government, we're seeing them, they're tracking them. We got videos, we got intelligence officers, you know, spilling the beans. But even then, I have not touched or seen one. So granted, I know that they're real. And for me, the big question mark is what's driving them, because I have theories on top of theories as far as non-human intelligence. Unfortunately, I have not put my hands on it. So I can't say to a certainty that aliens are real. But I can believe, because when you look at the universe, it's very possible that there are billions of planets with either primitive life or life equivalent to it. Even if they, listen, even if there's life on a star system that's really close to us in our own galaxy, it takes 100,000 years for a radio wave to cross the Milky Way. So even if there's a life, a civilization somewhere that's been around 40 to 50,000 years before us and they're super advanced, we're still not going to hear from them. You know?
Right.
So that's there's these rules that we have to play by in physics. But as far as UFOs here, you know, that, you know, the videos with the military, I'm convinced that they're real. You're seeing their performance. It's the question is, what are they? And so what I do to document, I'm probably, Holly, I'll tell you now, I'm probably going to get in trouble.
I think we all do. You know, in my younger years, I was the epitome of trouble. You know, I was one of those that was bound and determined. And back when I started in the 90s, we didn't have paranormal shows on TV.
Right.
It was unheard of. Like the only recollection I have of anything paranormal on TV, when, like I said, is in the 80s when we had the what they called the Pennsylvania Amityville, like close to my house. And seeing Ed and Lorraine Warren on TV talking about these intelligent things that could cause harm.
Right.
And, you know, going from that into the 90s, there was no guidebook. There was no programs on TV. There was really nothing. And even in it, by that point, we didn't even have, like, back in the 70s and 60s, they had these parapsychology departments at these universities. And so we had nothing to go by. And I mean, I was one of those rule breakers that would be like, oh, look, that place is abandoned. Let's go see if there's anything in there. Right. And yeah, I've grown a long way from there, but I still tend to bend the rules because, and I don't even think it's bending the rules. I think it's like rewriting them. I think we should be working together and respecting different beliefs and learning from one another instead of like seeking whatever it is we're seeking.
Right.
Yes. Whether it's popularity or money or fame. I mean, we're not doing anything good and we're not finding anything out by doing that. So that's always been my thing is I want to respect all people and, you know, all entities, regardless of what they are. I don't think enough people do that.
I agree. I'm what you call stupid brave. I'm the guy in the movie who dies immediately because I got to see what it is. I can't.
I've had that experience.
Yeah, you can't. Like, I saw a video where these guys are recording their version of a Bigfoot. I think it was in Russia. It was snowy. And they started running the other direction. That's not because then I won't sleep for a year. I'm going to be like, well, right. What was that? I run at that thing. And if it,
I have that experience at St. Albans in Virginia. We were investigating and there was an area that in the administrative hallway where they said they had like a crawler or a creeper. We'd set up a laser grid. And we were walking towards it, and it was me, and there was three bigger guys that, you know, kind of tough guys, and another one of my friends. And, you know, we're walking down the hallway, and we see this thing. We hear a pop, and then we see this black shadowy thing that comes into the laser grid and starts coming towards us. And I'm also very sarcastic. So the big guys are like, what should we do? And I'm like, I don't know, run. So they did, and I stayed there. And I don't even know what it was, but something just hit me with such force. It literally knocked me on the ground. But I'm that type of person. Like anytime I go to a location that they say, well, there's this or this or this. I'm like, show me. Where is it? I mean, one of two things is going to happen. It's going to hit you or it's going to disappear.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I just got to see it. I don't care what it is. Let's be honest. There's some shows I've seen where the guy, there's one in particular that drives me nuts. The guy's in there screaming at this thing. He's pulling his shirt off. He wants to fight it. I'm like, bro, it's a ghost. Stop it.
I think I know what show that is.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm laughing.
Yeah. Like, what do you think you're going to do exactly? You know, let's be honest. If you piss that ghost off, let's say it's hypothetically it's a ghost and you make it mad, you think, what, it's just going to beat you up like a bully? It's going to sit at your house. It's going to sing the same song all day, all night. It's going to drive you out of your mind. It's going to move your stuff around. I say this because that's what I would do. If I'm a ghost and you made me mad, I'm going to make life miserable. I'm going to move your stuff around, turn your TV on. I'll sing the same song over and over again. They'll bring a priest to exorcise me. But because I don't fall into that faith system, it's going to have little to no effect. So I'll probably just start singing songs with him too. You know, like,
yeah, I don't ever understand like what people think they're going to accomplish with provocation. I mean, I've seen investigators get hurt because of, you know, the instinct of others to provoke.
Sure.
And I've never been one to want to do that. Like when I hear people provoking or using language even that I think is going to cause issues, I'm like the first one that wants to get out of there. Because I don't want to be the one, you know, most of the time being someone that has a little bit, you know, psychic, I experience things that I don't like to experience personally. And I don't want to. So I try to avoid that because I experience enough without adding that level of provocation to it. So, yeah, I don't need that.
100%. Yeah, because imagine, like, you're screaming at an apparition. Like, come on, I'm going to get you out of here. Face me. I'm like, when I see these things, I'm like, what? I know that's made for TV. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well, you know? I've actually seen it without it being on TV. I was at a location where we were in a prison and someone was like, I'm going to tell the guards to take your stuff away. And I'm like, whoa, we can't do that. No, stop. Like, why would you do that to a prisoner? Their stuff is all they have.
Yeah, they're trying to initiate a response. It's
right. And all you're going to do is get a very angry response. And it's usually someone with psychic abilities on your team that's going to be the one to suffer first.
Right. I mean, it's bizarre. There's another video. What was that guy's name? Something Todd, where he was looking at Bigfoots and he had like this really great footage, like these close ups. I studied those videos very closely. They don't move. Or if they do, I mean, there's no pupil, there's no eye blink, there's nothing. So I immediately dismissed that. I've seen some of the older footage, we all know the Bigfoot footage from the 50s. You know,
yes.
I don't know. I've heard arguments back and forth on that. Then I heard someone say something to me that made pretty good sense. UFOs in particular, when they're, you know, when they move, they're utilizing a tremendous amount of energy. It might even be altering or ionizing the air around it and altering the physics around it, and could be opening portals to another dimension. We don't know. When we use nuclear weapons, you're harnessing the power of the sun in the tip of a missile. It could be affecting, like, we think we're blowing something up in a desert where there's no one around. How do we know that it's not melting a whole community in another existence?
Right.
You know, like, we don't know, and that's the problem with humans. We just do, and we make assumptions, and they're usually not safe ones. But when it comes to the paranormal, I think the approach, I would like to see more scientists involved. I have to assume that even Harvard grads want to know what happens post here. Because for a long time, like I was telling you earlier, I was really broken with religion. I just was done with it all. When you look at the human brain, the most complex computer on the planet, I figured that when it turns off, it's it. It's game over. There's exceptions, like my grandmother. She was very spiritual, and she wasn't like organized religion spiritual. So some of the things she said and some of the things she's experienced changed the way I think a little bit. But it wasn't till I watched a video and I analyze something, I will watch it 1,000 times to analyze it just to rule out any kind of nonsense. And I couldn't explain one thing in the video. The image in the video of what it was, an apparition upside down in this guy's house. And it gave it, I mean, I got to tell you, and it was daylight. This guy was recording himself fixing the house. You know, I'm not sure what his reason for doing it was, but that video is exceptionally long. The one you see on YouTube is short. It's just, you know, to the point. There's this thing. And he goes in the house and all the drawers are open, the cabinets are open. And you hear him say, nope. And he turns around and walks right out of the house. It wasn't until later when he looked at the footage and examined it in slow motion, still frame, where you see this entity upside down in the door frame. And I've literally examined this video hundreds and hundreds of times, and I couldn't explain it. And it made me think, now that's some evidence for me. And you could hear this guy's vocal tones, that he's having a chemical response to this. Like the pitch of his voice is going up. He's starting to shake a bit. This guy was scared, legit. And so that video gave a breath of life to the paranormal for me. And so that's where I'm on the podcast and eventually going to go out there to look. Because I've gone to places, Holly. I've gone to places that were recommended. Even in St. Augustine. And you know, maybe it's just they don't like me. Maybe it's something. Maybe it's personal. I don't know. You know,
I know there are some people, at least from what I've experienced, that, like, I know we tend to call them rocks or blocks. Like, you go places with them that you've been before and you know there's activity there. Nothing happened. And it's only tied to that one specific person. And I don't know, you know, what causes that.
I think maybe because I'm a jerk. I don't know.
I don't know, because I've seen a lot of jerks and they get a lot of activity. So I don't think it's that. But I mean, I think some, like, you know, in the psychic, you know, community, like, we have those that we call like rocks. Like, literally, like, I have people that I investigate with that I know if I'm feeling overwhelmed psychically, I can grab them and all of that disappears.
Huh.
And, you know, maybe you're one of those types of people.
It could be.
I mean, but when you were talking about like the scientist aspect of it, I don't know if you're familiar at all with like the Rhyme Research Institute.
I am. I've looked
into
them.
And then in Scotland, yeah, they have the Koestler Parapsychological Unit. And I did a lot of, I actually took a parapsychology course with the Koestler Institute with Carolyn Watt, wrote a Introduction to Parapsychology book. And I try to implement a lot of that stuff when I'm out there, you know, investigating.
You know, one of the other things that happened, it didn't happen to me. Again, an off-podcast interview, a physician, ER physician, or a surgeon. I think it was a surgeon. He was in the facility late at night. He was prepping one of the ORs for the night, because he was a teacher as well, an instructor. And he's preparing the OR for the students for the next day, and it's nighttime. And in his peripheral vision, he saw someone standing there. And he turned to look at it, and as it, like, I guess try to put in your mind like a frame wipe, you know, where it just goes black. He says as he turned, it disappeared as he looked at it. And it was the only incident he's ever had. It was isolated. And, you know, I got in contact with him through people I know. And his story, this is a physician, the way he spoke, you know, his tones, you could tell whatever he saw was really happened to him. And I even asked him, were you on a lot of, you know, were you on lack of sleep? Was there any factors there? He's like, no, it was just, I went into the OR to prep it for next day. So when I could show up and just teach, and I saw this, he goes, the only thing he described that was abnormal is that he kept getting a tickle in the back of his throat, and that he, like, you know, that feeling where you could sense something around and your hair stands up a little bit and your senses heighten for that second.
Yes.
That's what he described to me, like a chemical response. But it never happened to him again. And so there's a few off-podcast interviews I've done, and these aren't podcast-worthy. They're like a five-minute story, which one day I'm thinking about just recording a bunch of them and lobbing them together. Mm-hmm. His story compelled me. Another story was with a cop in Wisconsin, and he was telling me that he was at the station one night and he was doing their rounds, and it was relatively slow. It was really cold and snowy out, and they have a small, I believe he said like six different cells, like small jail thing, I guess, before they go to the big house.
Right.
And he saw something sitting in the corner rocking back and forth. And as he moved to it, it was just gone. Those are the stories I dig.
Yeah. And that's like, from my experience, you know, people who have had like these real, you know, experiences, I always hear that, you know, even me as a psychic, when I'm experiencing something that's, you know, what I can explain as like paranormal or supernatural, I get goosebumps on my arm. It feels like I feel cold, and the hairs on my arm literally start standing up. And, you know, and for me, a lot of times also is I get, it almost, I call it like my transistor radio.
Right.
Because I get something in my ear and people will literally see me like rubbing my fingers together, almost like I'm tuning in a radio.
Huh.
I never knew I did it until someone mentioned to me, are you getting something? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, you're tuning in your radio. And I'm like, I didn't even realize I was doing it. So I always hear that from a lot of people, though, that hair standing, the goosebumps, the, you know, and then just from out of nowhere, and especially like the peripheral,
yeah.
Because from what I've studied on the scientific side, it's the way our eyes are formed. We can see those supernatural things better from that peripheral vision than we can from straight on vision.
In a state of fear, because it's imprinted on our DNA is to be afraid of the cat or the bear in the wild. You know, it's still our primitive instinct. So when we get paranoid or frightened, our senses heighten, our hearing, our sight, or even our taste and smell. It's basically us having a chemical response and then building up to be able to see the predator. And I think that would be the time where you would most likely see something. And I'm not saying a false witness, you know, like you're having a chemical response and you have some sort of in your brain, a chemical response in your brain that'll make you see something that's not there. That happens, but in most cases, your senses heighten, so you could be in a position to detect the predator more readily. I look for that. I look for a lot of these videos I see on you, and unfortunately, I hate saying this. YouTube and TikTok, they're really damaging the paranormal community. Because
I am one of those that like goes through and picks apart.
Yeah.
My daughter hates watching YouTube paranormal videos with me.
Yeah, because, you know, I look for chemical responses. I look for people's response. Even vetted people who have been out in the paranormal, and I've talked to a lot of them, they still have a chemical response. They still have a bit of a fear because it's still the unknown. Yeah.
We still have I'm not only a female investigator, but for 2.5 years, I investigated in a wheelchair. So even then, you know, being disabled, I still had that fighter. Even though I want to know and want to see, you get that fight or flight after 2 years in a wheelchair when I was able to get up and move again.
Well, even more
I remember then. Yeah, people saying, oh my gosh, she can run again. This sucks. Because I will. If something's like really feeling off to me, I'm the first one out of that room.
I personally think if you're disabled, your senses are even more heightened. You know, because your body's aware that I have a disadvantage here, so I need to see the predator sooner.
Yep, I need to go, and that's like always. Like even I've had experiences at the orphanage in Gettysburg, and you know my first response is I have to go. You know, I need to go. We need to go. And, you know, I try to listen to it, but I don't always. And, you know, there is that level of fear that when I don't see that in other investigators, I question,
right?
You know, is this really happening? Because, you know, I know 30 plus years and I still get fearful. Or maybe I'm a chicken.
You know, these videos on YouTube specifically, I could tell they're doing it for likes and views. Look, it's the world we live in now. I've come to terms with it. But there's one guy, he does not have a string of videos, right? His channel's not dedicated to this. He, in fact, goes to, his whole thing is finding abandoned places and looking at them. And hey, remember when...
Urbex.
Yeah. Like they look at places that they used to be this grand place. Now what it looks like now, it's terrible, blah, blah, blah. Well, in one of their off videos, and I'm not sure if it's the same group of guys, but he had released a video and it's only about maybe a minute and change. He's walking through and you can see he's trying to record. So in the before image, he shows what the dining room at this restaurant looked like. And then it swaps over to what it looks like now. And then he just drops his phone and you hear him screaming and runs out of there.
That would be me sometimes.
No doubt. Whatever he saw, legit. Because he left his phone. Like, who drops their iPhone? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Especially at the cost that they are right now.
There's people that are in flat-out shootouts with in gang wars, and they make sure the phone is secured. You know? So
yeah.
This guy, and whatever he saw, put him on the run.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I see that. Like, I mean, you think, like... I look at more science, like when you look at the more scientific investigators, they are really relying on equipment and trying to get answers through equipment. So I don't think that level of fear exists as much with them as it does the more what we call like spiritual or psychical investigators.
Right.
Because we're looking for impressions and feelings and, you know, we're not just looking at equipment. Me personally, I break equipment. I just purchased, an SB7T, which is the spirit box, the newer one. And I'm still trying to learn how to work it. I was literally asking people on Facebook today, like, what is sweep rate? What is this? I'm clueless, but I have an interest in that. But at the same time, I think, you know, having both on a team and experiencing it from a scientific and also from a psychical or spiritual level, it can help.
Right.
So I like the way I do things, and I know, you know, people I'm friends with prefer to do it the more scientific way. So it, having that meld, which I haven't found yet. So,
well, that's why when I eventually, you know, I was going to do the documentary some time ago. I didn't because I came to the conclusion I can't do it on my own by myself because I don't have luck. I go to these places, nothing happens. So if it is indeed that it's something with me that they don't want to interact with, then I have to bring a team. And I figured the team would, because if I'm going to do the doc, it's going to include all the big ones, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, big, all of it. And I would imagine I would need someone to have an expertise in each field.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Then, and then a couple of people that are non-biased that they just don't believe shit. So when you have these experts, when you have these seasoned people, these vetted people that in their particular fields, and then a couple of people who don't believe in anything, it would make for better research. Because then if we're going to a place that's considerably a hotbed and nothing's happening, you know, it's me. All right. That's what I'm like, all right, guys, I'm going back to the hotel and see what you can
find. And you guys do your thing me not here.
And then, because that was my fear. I go out and do this documentary, and it'd be like 3 months of filming nothing, you know? And so I'd be at the hotel, and I imagine, this is my imagination, is that one of the guys would call me like, yeah, it turns out it is you.
Right, it is you. Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know how other investigators or people in the field approach it, but when I first started out, I wanted to believe everything was paranormal.
Right.
And I've learned, and I think as you become seasoned and you become experienced, you learn to enter everything with healthy skepticism. Like, I question everything now.
Yeah.
Like, is there a possible leak? Is there, you know, carbon monoxide? Is it the electrical lines? Is there, you know, a shorted wire? And I never used to be that way. But as I've grown, I've learned to question everything. And in my house, we have, you know, me, I'm all into the paranormal. And then my husband on the other side is the UFO guy. So we have some very interesting conversations between the two of us because he's not a big believer in the paranormal. But you want to talk about UFOs, he'll talk to you for hours.
I tend to lean on the idea that there's a lot of parallels there. I think ufology has a lot to do with the paranormal. I think that they trigger it. I mean, I keep hearing from people, some of the strongest investigations they do are in or around power plants or nuclear plants or anywhere where there's harnessed energy. Because if you look at now, the Skinwalker Ranch, they're discovering that below the surface there is moving water with other minerals, which could cause a magnetic force, which could very well alter not just your state of mind, and not just your health, but it could ultimately potentially open gateways between dimensions. I believe that
because I'm obsessed with Skinwalker Ranch. Everything that I can watch about it, and I never was in the beginning. And my closest friend, she got me heavily involved into watching the documentaries and stuff on it. And I didn't want to believe it at first, but then as I've been watching, I'm like, whoa, that kind of makes sense. Wow, you know, and they're scientists. You know, it's not just like they're lay people going there just for the heck of it. These are guys that are like some of the best in their fields.
Yeah. I noticed 2 years ago, I was talking to someone. I'm not going to say his name, but I was confiding in him. I'm like, if I go do a documentary, should I go to Skinwalker Ranch? I mean, should I record there? And he's like, nah, don't waste your time. It's all horseshit. And then I found out that's primarily where he's been. He's been there the entire time doing research.
Wow.
So in my mind, I'm like, well, why would he? Like, I'm not an expert in anything. I do a podcast. And if nothing more, the documentary is not. Look, I'm going to be frank with people. I'm not doing this to satisfy the world. It's for me. I want to satisfy my curiosity. I want to know before I depart here, you know. But to hear him do that made me think, like, well, either something really good's going on there, or he just doesn't. I don't know. Is this,
he doesn't want to share.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way I always look at it. You know, for me, I'm one of those people. I want to not only educate for myself, because that's honestly, I can say I got into this for selfish reasons.
Same.
However, now it's more not only answering questions for myself, but for other people. And that's why I think I like, you know, I really like working with clients and helping them get answers, even if not everything is paranormal, you know, helping them find help.
Yeah,
is, I mean, like, my main goal, like, whether it's, you know, and that's why I think it's important to have, you know, that all around approach to investigating, because not everything is paranormal. You know, there right. could be other issues there.
I mean, listen, I've had some pretty wild podcasts since I started. I'd spoken to a lot of paranormal UFO people. I probably have about 400 episodes right now. You know how many podcasts I'd canceled within the first 30 minutes?
Wow.
Because I could just tell that what they're telling me is horseshit. You know?
I feel good now then.
It's well, but, because you're genuine, you know, your approach is like mine. It's of curiosity. Your experiences are not, I've had more people use that word expert. It drives me. There's no way you're an expert on something we don't have any real tangible proof on.
It's, right. How can you be an expert in anything? Like, I won't even say that, like, which is my big forte is spirituality and the occult. And I still won't say I'm an expert because I don't know it all.
Yeah, I'll tell you, like, I watch a lot of animal documentaries, too. And there was one guy I followed for a long time. He was an expert on arachnids. And I'll never forget when he was on one of the shows, he's like, look, I mean, it turns out I don't know everything about him. Because he found a species in South America that was mind-blowing to him. And even he, who has, so it's safer to say that he's a professional in the arachnids, rather than say right. expert, because there's no way you know every detail.
No, and the paranormal is such a broad, and when you look at, you know, the paranormal, it does, like you said, branch off into ufology and even cryptozoology. There's so many aspects of the paranormal that right. there's not any way that any person can know it all.
Right, and it's not good to compartmentalize. I think ufologists and paranormal people and just anything that's, when I say paranormal, I want people to understand it's parallel to what you consider normal.
Yep.
And so I think anyone that has abnormalities that they're working on, they should speak openly and have conferences monthly and see if they could find some sort of baseline, something mm-hmm. that ties it. Because there's definitely parallels. And what it is, unclear, but we should look deeper into that.
Oh, I agree. Like, I am actually this summer going to my first, like, Bigfoot, yeah, cryptid type of festival,
right?
To hear, you know, the groups that go out and research Bigfoot, and, you know, I, because I'm actually very intrigued by it, because allegedly there have been sightings in our area. You know, we are part of the Appalachian Mountains, so, you know, there are, you know, reports of it. Like, I've investigated an old ghost town here in PA that there have been reported sightings. I mean, I've never seen any of the proof, but I just know from hearing when we had gone there that, you know, oh, well, allegedly people have seen, you know, Bigfoot or some type of cryptid. And, you know, that intrigues me. I want to learn. I want to understand, like, you know, who knows, because I do like to go to these old ghost towns. You know, I live probably 15, 20 minutes from Centralia, which is like a huge in the ghost town talk.
Right.
And, you know, so that's like always something I've been intrigued with, like, you know, going to these places and seeing it, are there any remnants left behind from the people who live there?
I'll tell you something. There is not a lot of laws in the country protecting certain people, certain ethnicities, especially when they're not from America. Right. Meanwhile, there's laws in Oregon. It's either Oregon or Washington State that it's illegal to kill Bigfoot.
I believe that, you know, being someone that is, you know, part indigenous, you know, they're not even a lot of laws that protect us. So. Well,
that's the point I make. Like, we barely do enough to protect our citizens. We ultimately don't respect the rights of our citizens in a lot of cases, but there's actually a law. You can't kill something we haven't even proved is real yet.
And how do you know? Like, yeah. How can you tell? Like, okay, this person killed Bigfoot. Well, are you sure? Is that Bigfoot? Like,
I mean, you got to understand.
Because nobody knows what Bigfoot is even at the point. There's so many theories of, like, ultra-terrestrial and, you know, cryptid and all these theories that are out there because no one knows. No one's ever actually been able to capture one to research it.
It makes me curious because for me personally, if I'm out doing research on Bigfoot and I see Bigfoot, I'm sorry, folks. He gets shot. I need proof.
You know what I mean? See, you're going to shoot him and I'm going to run.
I mean, if you kill an alien, do you go to jail?
Like, I don't know.
Like, That's a really good question, right?
Imagine, I mean, are there laws protecting aliens?
Not the, as far as I know, no. But the point I make is if you're out in public somewhere, when I say public, you're out like at a festival and they're out in a field somewhere doing research and you see them and one looks at you and you get startled and you shoot it and it dies. Do you go to jail?
I have no idea. That would be an end. I'm actually going to ask that question, I think.
Yeah, because imagine being in jail and they're like, hey, what'd you do? I'm like, I shot an alien.
Killed Bigfoot.
They're like, you what? I shot an alien. Like, and me, but it's jail in America. You probably go, I know a guy to get you off of that one.
Right. I know somebody who knows somebody.
It's crazy because when I first found it out, I thought it was horseshit. I thought the guy told me that was lying. And I looked into it, and there sure is a, I forget, I think.
I would think that would be like in that area, that Washington, Oregon area, because there are some interesting laws out there. So, you know, I mean, I know in PA, for example, like, you know, they have the, so many strange laws. And yeah. Some of them are just, you know, being brought out into the open. Like, do you know it's illegal to do this? And I'm like, no.
Skamania County, Washington considers itself to be a Bigfoot refuge. And a 1984 ordinance states that killing an endangered ape-like creature could get you a year in jail and $1,000 fine. Or both.
Wow.
What?
You know, what happens if it's someone dressed as Bigfoot?
I think they had it coming. So it's just a bizarre thing to read because how long did it take us in this country to fix segregation and race issues and they fixed
Bigfoot? And we're still working on that.
Yeah, we're legit still
we
working
still
on it.
We still haven't figured that out.
But there's a place in the country where Bigfoot is considered to be protected.
And he has safe refuge.
That is crazy.
I had not heard of that ever before. And like I said, it's not my wheelhouse, but I'm slowly getting interested in it. I've had an interest in cryptozoology for quite a while. And, you know, I've done a little bit, you know, of reading and research, but I've really, you know, I mean, since COVID hit, I've had a lot of time on my...
Yeah, that's what put me on the path to the podcast, if I'm being honest, that time.
Well, and with me, that's how, like, you know, I was a homeschooling mom. So now my kids are grown, they're out of college, they're having families of their own, and it's just like, oh, what do I do now? So
well, I people ask me a lot because I, before COVID, I didn't watch TV. I was out shooting pool, hanging out with friends. I was never home. I was gone. Right. And then when COVID hit, you're like, well, I got to sit home. What am I going to do? Right. And then what really kicked it off is I watched an episode of Joe Rogan where he's talking to Bob Lazar. And then that led to another video. And then before you know it, it's 4:30 in the morning. I'm watching ghost videos. I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
You went down the rabbit hole.
it was just 8 p.m. How's it 4:30 a.m. already? What happened? You know? Yep. So that's what got me
that
path.
That's what happens. You just, like, I have had nights, even after all the time that I've been doing this, I still have nights where I get on my computer and I start researching and looking at locations and looking at, you know, experiences. And the next thing I know, it's the next day.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It starts like this. I'll tell you how it happened to me a couple of times, especially during COVID. It started with watching documentaries and then small videos. Then you're watching ghost videos. Then you're watching proof aliens. And before you know it, 6:30 in the morning, you're watching cute little cat videos. And you're not sure how you got to that point.
Yeah, where'd that come from? Yeah. And I know... Because, like, with me, you know, I do a lot on TikTok, you know, mostly because I see so much false information on there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very much involved with a large witches community in Pennsylvania. So we see so much false information about that community, you know, about the whole realm of that path that I do a lot on there, you know, to try to educate. And all of a sudden, you know, if you're watching paranormal and, you know, witch-based and, you know, even native TikTok stuff, and I ended up in the North Sea.
Jeez.
And I don't know if you've ever seen any videos about the North Sea.
No, tell me about it.
Oh, my God. It becomes so addicting because, like, when the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean meet,
right,
they don't mix. And you literally have this line where you can tell what is the Pacific and what is the Atlantic. And I am so obsessed with finding out and figuring out the chemistry of why.
That is bizarre. I got to look into that now.
And that's what I said. Now, all of a sudden, all my videos that I see popping up anywhere are all on the North Sea and, you know, like watching boats being taken under by the sea and icebergs and, you know, all this crap. And my kids were like, why are you so obsessed? Why does that scare you? Are you ever going to be in the North Sea? And I said, I don't know.
Yeah, you know what it's like when your friends hop on your YouTube, like I have it set up for my TV and they see your algorithm and it's documentaries, ghost stuff and kittens. They're like, what the hell's wrong with you, bro?
Yeah, mine has gone, you know, through that gamut because I don't really post a lot. I think the last video I posted was when I was on a field trip and we were at the Rhine Institute and we made a video because someone said Mothman was an elemental.
Oh, boy.
We made a whole video about it, like, you know, made him look like a fairy. And no, it was pretty fun.
I got to tell you, if Mothman, Bigfoot, or any of these entities were in Texas, I'm fairly certain they'd be shot and proven already.
Oh, I agree. You know, or even like if you think about like even in like but there have been sightings. But I think about like places even like West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, even though that's where Mothman was. And I mean, but they celebrate. Like, I mean, I've been to the area.
I'll tell you now, if Mothman was still in West Virginia, he'd be shot.
I don't know if you've ever been there where he was seen and like the honor that they give him. He has even a huge, shiny statue in the middle of town.
Well, you got to consider what he did for the economy. You know, people go in there to look, they're spending money. Like, here, I live in Florida, right? Where this is basically summer for like, I don't know, 10 months.
Right.
And so it's already got a tourism fash to it, but everything crazy happens in Florida. This is the document. I remember looking at the map thinking, where do I have to go? And then I examined Florida. I'm like, I'm going to be in Florida for 5 years of this video. everything crazy happens here, you know? So when I started doing the research into the hotbeds for ufology and the paranormal, I had to exclude Florida because St. Augustine by itself is, I don't know, a refuge, I would say, for the afterlife.
Right.
But it's crazy to see the roadmap I would be on. It's these, and I'm finding more and more that it's these towns. And when you look at these maps, and I've never heard this on a documentary, I've never heard anyone speak of this, but whenever you look at these maps of these hotbeds, they're always really close to military bases and or large energy facilities.
Yes.
Like extremely close. And I found that to be odd, you know? So.
Well, and not only that, I mean, I don't know if you ever cross-reference any of your information with like mounds, the Native American mounds.
Yeah. Yeah. The Smoky Mountains in particular.
Especially through where I live. You know, I live along the Susquehanna River, which was like a very prominent, you know, area of, you know, burial grounds. And, right. You know, the majority of the activity that we see in houses is houses that were built over the mounds. And you try to explain that to them and they're like, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, I'm sorry, but
that's how it is here in Florida. In the Safety Harbor area, there's Indian burial mounds. And they say that they're in this park there. There's a park by the water. But I read later that it's just all over Safety Harbor. So there's homes built right on top of these things.
Oh, West Virginia Penitentiary is literally across the street from a gigantic mound.
Jeez.
You know, literally, you can climb the mound because they have a museum and everything there. And, you know, they claim almost all of the people that were buried there and the things that they found are gone and relocated. However, like, you don't know, like, how many generations back that went, so you can't, you know, say for sure you got everything
right.
And you look, you stand on that mound because you can hike it, and you look, and right directly across the street is the entrance to the West Virginia Penitentiary.
And then people wonder, you know, how much misery happens in those places.
Right.
I mean,
and you think of that, the heightened misery and agony that occurred in a penitentiary, and then right directly by it, you have a huge burial mound. Like, how is that not going to be the perfect recipe for activity?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, you have two different forces of energy piled next to one another. It's crazy.
Hey, and the same thing with like the Bel Air House in Maryland. Like, they have a perfect storm between ley lines and being part of the Underground Railroad, and then the person that had lived there was very much into spiritualism and performed seances and in the house.
Can you
know,
Try to imagine insane. like the pyramids. I'm always fascinated by the pyramids and other structures, and so I try to imagine, there's no doubt in my mind the pyramids are made many thousands of years before the Egyptians, and they just stake claim on it, because that's, we know that humans do this, we go there, we have the guy. That's even like gold. Why is gold valuable? Probably someone found it and it was shiny and pretty. Another guy asked about it, and what did he tell the other guy? God gave it to me. I'm chosen. And then the guy's like, well, how do I get some of that gold? Like, well, what do? Oh, you're a farmer. Let me get some of your wheat or your grain, and I'll give you a little bit of this gold that from the gods that I got. And before you know it, that's how currency started.
Right. I could totally see that, especially with the way that it boomed and people were looking for it everywhere. I know I like shiny things.
Because when you look at the pyramids and you look at the internal structure, it's not big enough for people. It really isn't. Right. The walkways are not big enough for people. It's either that thing was some sort of, beacon and door, or the whatever resided there was quite small. And or it was built as a machine. Because I just don't picture that being something that when you look at the Egyptians and what they actually built for the people, it was outrageously large. It was they made statements, the gods built, made me important. And I have this building I live in that's outrageously huge. The Romans did this. The Greeks did this. Yet the pyramids don't fit they just don't fit the recipe. Right. Everything inside that place is really small. So what built it? What lived there many thousands of years ago? It's questionable. And that's why I tell people, when we speak in terms of the afterlife, we don't know what resided here before.
No, we don't.
And it's really a dangerous thing. With the Ouija board, people say, well, you could conjure danger. You could conjure danger with anything. If you're putting your energy toward it, you can make a pen dangerous. Exactly.
And I explain to people, I always get that because I'm a collector of Ouija boards. I love them. I have handmade ones. I have cut ones. I have one that was made on a piece of wood from Ireland that my grandfather brought with him. And I'm always you can easily, what it is what we call divination. And you can easily get that same response using a pendulum. You can easily have the same thing happen just recording EVPs. You're divining. You're looking for something.
It's what we give power to. And if you do it with enough suggestion and enough energy, you could probably give something. That's what I was talking to John Russell about, that with luck, lucky charms and lucky stones. Whatever you put stock into, ultimately you're putting into yourself.
Right. It's what are they called? Tuplas, thought forms.
Right. So are there properties of certain things that could probably enhance it? Sure. You could get better radio waves if you extend the antenna, per se. But the point is, you have to put stock into that item at the end of the day.
Exactly. It comes down to belief. If you fear something enough, it's going to give you cause to fear it.
100%. Well, Holly, before we close out, let anyone know where they can find you, if you have a website or if there's any kind of social media you want, just put it out there. I'll put it in the description as well.
Yep, no problem. I do have a website. It's still under construction, but it's there. It's hollyfaust.com. On social media, people can find me. It's Holly L. Faust. It'll say Holly Faust, author and psychic medium. And also, reach out to our team at Phantom Detectives LLC.
I like those guys. Joshua,
that wonderful people to work with.
That Joshua, that guy's a determined person, bro. That guy,
he is so determined, and he has been an amazing investigator to mentor.
Yeah,
he really has a want to do something great.
He's one of those people that his desire gets large enough, he could do anything he wants. He's got that kind of
mind frame. Believe that, and I respect him because as I'm trying to work and help him and teach him, he's also teaching me. I wish I was where, he's not much younger than me, but, it's enough of a difference that I wish I was there, because I was stuck in a very negative situation for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to get out of it. And now that I'm out of it, I look at him and say, man, I wish I had that gumption, way back when. And he pushes me every day to get better myself.
That guy is driven. I mean, he like yeah. I see him on social media. He's always like he never has a day off. The guy is driven.
And he doesn't. And I mean, he messages me daily. We have conversations about things and how to make things better for the team, how to get our name out there more, how to, you know, he promotes my writing. And, you know, I'm in the process of writing two more books right now. And he really encourages me to keep going with those. So, yeah, I give him.
Yeah, you got Melissa Verrazano on the team. Melissa's a sweetheart. You know,
yes, I mean, she is. And it's so funny because we're similar, but yet different.
Right.
And I don't know Rick as much.
Rick's cool. He's he's into martial arts. He's started in ufology, investigating UFOs. Yep. And
yeah, he was part of MUFON.
Yeah. Then he graduated to because he recognized the parallels between ufology and paranormal. You know, I mean, so he
won. And it is there because that's how I was. I may have started in the paranormal, but then when I met my husband and was seeing parallels between that and then, you know, researching and finding the parallels in cryptozoology with the paranormal, it's like, you know, why can't we work on all of them together?
I mean, it's the vision's there and you got the team for it.
Definitely. I totally agree. Like, I'm hoping for great things.
I think they'll come. So for those that are listening, we're going to say good day, good evening, good night, whatever it is for you. And I'm going to talk to Holly in post.